We begin today's show with some obvious thoughts and prayers for the people of Ottawa, anybody affected by the shootings that are going on today and have gone on. Ongoing investigation by the Ottawa Police Service and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police on reports of shooting incidents in the downtown area. They can confirm reports of incidents occurring at the National War Memorial and on Parliament Hill. The shooting victim succumbed to his injuries, the soldier who was shot at the War Memorial, and the male suspect confirmed deceased inside Parliament Hill.
Ottawa police do say they believe there is more than one shooter, so still being taken very seriously in downtown Ottawa. And yeah,
well, I don't think
condolences to the family of the.
I don't think this is anything where they should cancel a game, though, Jeffy. It's hockey. Battle of Ontario,
If you want to tweet that to me, like, go f yourself, because it's the right move. And I'm sorry. Oh, the terrorists win. Yeah, I'm sure the terrorist goal today was to cancel a freaking hockey game. Like, I'm sorry, this is not a case where the terrorists win, or that's just what these animals want. Oh, we're succumbing. No, we're not. You make sure the city is safe, and you give people a chance to grieve. It's part of the frickin' process, you assholes. Anyone wants to tweet me that, just unfollow me. Please, do me the favor.
This is obviously the second game in a couple of years where the NHL has canceled it due to a tragedy. Canceling the Boston Bruins and the Ottawa Senators, sort of crazily, ironically, a couple hours after the Boston Marathon bombings on Patriot Day last year, and then canceling the Leafs and Senators. Well, sorry, postponing the Leafs and Senators. I used cancel in a post, and I was admonished for it. Postponing the game tonight. That's the only thing they can do. The only thing that I wondered about, and it could go either way, was the fact that the arena is so far away from
downtown. Is in Canada? Yeah, I know, but even for the very simple fact that if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, for example, and you can hear shots from your hotel room, that's rattling you for the day. Like, for the good of everybody, for the good of the city of Ottawa, who wants to go see a hockey game tonight? Oh, but they want to take their minds off it. No, they don't. Give the city a chance to grieve and heal a little bit. Like, at least give them a chance to take a breath. Don't just go like, whew, okay, we got through the afternoon, the Prime Minister's addressed the country, now we're ready to move on. No, I don't think we are. Just like Boston wasn't, just like New York wasn't in 2001, not ready yet. Not going to be ready tonight, sorry. Not going to happen.
Yeah. And obviously, no one wants to see a game either. Maybe some people do for the distraction of it, but I think for the most part, people are not in the mood to watch the Battle of Ontario tonight.
I understand that a lot of people want to hear Lyndon Sluage and want to hear that anthem and want to, you know, stand up, and they want to, you know, this is a city that's taken a knee. Some would say this is a country that's taken a knee right now, and you want to stiffen your spine. But again, for the good of everybody involved and out of respect to the soldier who passed away this afternoon, let's just please take a breath and not play a hockey game tonight. Can we all just agree to do that, please? Good for the NHL for postponing this one.
Yeah, it is. And it's the right call. Let me ask you, we're not going to do the whole show on the shooting thing. We have a lot of
although I do have to admit, like, I'm going to be 100% distracted on the show. Like, if there are moments where I say, what, Greg, sorry, what did you say? Because I'm constantly on the internet here trying to find more information out. So I apologize in advance for being an absentee co-host today.
No, we have a lot of other sunny topics to cover, like Slava Voynov's lawyer saying he never hit anybody.
Yeah.
Anyways, as a Canadian, so we're you know, look, Americans see this happening, and we think about our own tragedies, school shootings and 9/11 and the sniper shootings in D.C., where I was living at the time, and that was a very scary deal, so I kind of empathized with the people of Ottawa when you have some random shit go down with guys with guns and you're not really sure if you should be walking outside. Where's your head at as a Canadian? I mean, do you think that this is... I've seen some people tweet out and write, you know, we've lost our innocence. I can't imagine Canadians are that naive to believe that this is the thing that makes you lose your innocence.
Listen, the innocence in Canada when it comes to this type of affair was lost during the FLQ crisis of the early 70s. So to say that this is Canada losing its innocence, I'm sorry. That was during the FLQ crisis, and that wasn't, and that's not this. The interesting thing about it is America has and there is sort of widespread push against this, and I get that, but there is a general overall acceptance of guns It is a land that was conquered. Like, this is the best way that I've been able to synthesize the differences between America and Canada. America was conquered. Canada is a country to be endured, with four distinct seasons from coast to coast. One is a story of endurance, and one is a story of conquer. And there's still very much writ large an acceptance of gun culture in the United States that doesn't really exist in Canada. Canadians are a lot closer to the Japanese in that sense, in that generally we abhor anything to do with guns. You know, we're famous for negotiating. We're famous for talking people out of crisis situations that are holding guns. We're not a law of Hammurabi, eye for an eye. It's more like you study what the motivations were that led to this specific action. Now, is that changing? Absolutely. Is Canada becoming more like its neighbor to the south? Absolutely. But gun violence still does strike a very, very sharp nerve here in Canada. And I know for many people listening to this podcast, it does in the United States as well, and I respect that. But by and large in Canada, it's really distasteful and it's really offensive and quote unquote un-Canadian to have this type of gun violence.
But do you think that there's going to be a, for lack of a better term, American response to it? Insofar as tightening
well,
of
I don't,
laws,
is,
and
well, the, court, th- the thing I mean, is,
are
the
we
going
to hold on? Are we going to see a giant obstacle course placed around the war memorial in Parliament Hill for the next
100%,
5 years?
100%, 100%, 100%. And it's a friend of mine. I spent all morning starting to build the rink for the kids with my brother-in-law and a couple of neighbors. And the one neighbor was talking to an RCMP officer who said, "You know, as horrible as this may sound, this was a long time coming in Ottawa because." Security is pretty relaxed. You know, it's pretty loose. We're pretty smug as Canadians about our security. Oh, it's fine. Why do our officers even have guns? I see, as far as an American response, I can see an American response around Parliament Hill, War Memorial. Soldiers, by the way, across the country today are being told not to wear their uniforms. That's frightening, unless they're in active duty. But as far as again, we don't know who the shooter was. We don't know who the shooters were. We don't know who or what they represent. So coming shy of jumping to conclusions, I don't know that Canada, to be quite blunt, I don't know Canada's armed to have an American response. Like, what are we going to do? Like, really? What do we do anyhow? I mean, what are we doing right now with ISIS? We're throwing support and sending a couple of planes over because that's all that we can do. I mean, we're stretched to protect our borders now, and most of that we rely on the United States to do so. Thank you very much. So I don't know that we can have the quote-unquote American response because we're not armed to do so. But as far as, you know, roadblocks and security blocks around major governmental and cultural institutions, it wouldn't surprise me at all.
Interesting stuff. Chris Johnston coming up later to talk about this stuff. Obviously, there is a hockey angle to it with the game being postponed, and the Leafs and Senators both in lockdown this morning. Leafs saying they heard shots from their hotel room, which is kind of scary.
I know.
We'll have CJ on to talk about that, but also talk about the Slavov-Voynov stuff, which is still going on. Let's get into that now, because that is a bunch of bright sunshine right after we do the intro. And also today is the question and answer thing that we do on Wednesdays. That's
that
a mailbag.
That we're not going to call by its name because
the
it
thing
might be
that
tasteless
we call it today.
Today.
It might be tasteless, right.
So send us email. It's our email. It's our mailbag thingy segment later on.
This is the level, my level of Twitter annoyance today. Like, I am usually the first person to say F you when it comes to the too soon for that today kind of thing. I'm just so edgy and ornery and whatever about being on social media today. I just don't need it from anybody to say that. So we'll just call it a mailbag this Wednesday, return to regular scheduled programming next week, and tweet us at Wyshynski at Jeff Merrick and email us at puckdaddyblog@yahoo.com and then hit us on the subreddit, MBSW subreddit as well, with your GP questions for this Wednesday. And with that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Guinea pig questions.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
I'm going to take a pie in the face, sir. Now let me through.
Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
It's a tax write-off. You get to throw a pie in my face and write it off for taxes.
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
All right, listen. I know that Craig Ranetsky, not to be confused with Gergretsky, has a job to do as Slava Voynov's lawyer. All lawyers have jobs to do. And I understand that in today's culture, we all just accept the fact that we're going to get half-truths and obfuscation and obstruction and PR spin and everything when lawyers speak. It doesn't mean that we can't be angry about it or frustrated by it. And I'm sorry, like, he interviewed with Nick Kostanica on our blog today. He interviewed with Ken Campbell as well. He interviewed with TMZ. And the line he's putting out there is, I can't go into details, but based on my interview with the woman involved, it was very clear to me by the end of this interview that Mr. Voynov never hit her. I mean, this is totally a different situation, quite frankly, than the Ray Rice situation in the NFL. It's not even the same class. Over and over again, he didn't hit her. He didn't hit her. Over and over again, well, what did he do? Over and over again, well, the investigation, flah, flah, flu, flu. But, I mean, we could rule out that he didn't hit her. We just can't really pinpoint what did happen to cause these horrific injuries that once photographed and sent to the National Hockey League resulted in him being suspended in the middle of the night. So I think it's okay as a society to be upset about this. I don't accept, well, that's just how lawyers are. I don't accept, well, he's just protecting his client. Then don't say a word about it. Don't stand up here and be like, he didn't hit her. And then when pressed about it, be like, flotty, flotty, flu, flu, whistle, whistle.
Yeah. Oh, he's trying to get his client reinstated. Right, he's trying to get his client back to playing hockey. And as much as it is infuriating, and it's a tough one to read, and it reads extremely lawyerly, that's his job. He's completely doing his job to try to get his client reinstated. Chris Johnson, as you mentioned, is going to drop by in about 7 minutes' time. And he sort of brings up in an excellent piece at sportsnet.ca some of the complications and the sort of pretzeling that this case may lead the NHL into. But I'm not surprised. I'm a little bit, oh, really? With the, you know, oh, she fell defense. I mean, how many times have we heard/seen that one before? But again, I have to temper all of this by saying I don't know what happened. I have no clue. I wasn't there. I haven't seen the injuries. I haven't talked to anyone other than a third party, well, two third parties that were involved who said what happened was awful, as I was discussing on yesterday's podcast or the day before. So, my belief is still the same one that I had when he was first taken into custody. Is the lawyer doing what the lawyer is supposed to do? Yeah. Is it infuriating? Well, welcome to lawyers. I think we've all had more than one experience. Hopefully you haven't, but if you have, you know exactly what this feels like. It's frustrating. It's infuriating, but we can't pretend to be surprised by it. Like, you weren't surprised by it, Wish, were you?
I was surprised by how much detail he went into, to be honest with you.
But only detail to protect his client. Only detail to protect his client. That's the infuriating part. I will give you details that shine a light on my client, but everything else, well, we'll let the investigation play itself out.
That's my point. No, Merrick, that's my point. My point is that when people are like, well, what did you find infuriating about it? Well, he gave a rather detailed interview to Nick. He gave a rather detailed interview to Ken. That went beyond what you'd expect, which is that I'm confident that at the end of this investigation, my client will be cleared and innocent and he'll be reinstated in the National Hockey League. I'm confident that he has done nothing. And, you know, there's a bit more detail than the usual boilerplate stuff you'd get. And it gets to a point where you have either ors. You know, it's either he hit her or he didn't. And if he didn't, what did he do? It's either the victim indicated something about domestic violence that would cause the caseworkers at the hospital to go to the police, or something was lost in translation. And Kid Ish hit a good point on this just before we got on the show. You know, one of the basis of the defense right for Voinov right now via his lawyer is the idea that she did not have a translator in the room. She speaks very little English. She wanted Slava to come in and do the translation. They wouldn't allow it. And it's all a big misunderstanding, Three's Company style. And Kiddush writes in, lost in translation when she wasn't using the interpreter I provided for her, who certainly isn't being paid by me. Exactly. I mean, the lawyer sat down with the victim, did an investigation with an interpreter he brought into the room. I mean, listen, are you going to tell me that you didn't think at least once about the word coercion or mm-hmm. pressure being applied to the victim mm-hmm. in this case? For God's sakes. Mm-hmm. That's
one
why
thing,
they don't allow
I,
this to happen in many cases.
Right. And the one thing that I am so far glad about with all of this is that the pictures haven't been released, or the pictures haven't been leaked. So she hasn't been doubly violated. I mean, one of the things that I found outside of, you know, the left cross by Ray Rice, another thing that I found really disturbing was how his then girlfriend, now wife, had her rights completely violated by that video being released.
Right.
In TMZ area. And so I'm just glad that so far Slava Voinov's partner's pictures haven't been released.
And to that end, Nick dug up a nugget, which I thought was interesting, which is that the lawyer said Voinov was not present at the interview that the lawyer did with the woman, but that he and the woman are currently together again. And also Voinov has not yet spoken to the NHL. Now, keep in mind, throughout all of this, he hasn't been charged with anything yet. That's mm-hmm. part of this whole thing. He hasn't been charged with anything yet. Look, at the end of the day, you know, there's going to be a lot of fallout either way, and Chris is going to get into some of it vis-a-vis the hockey implications. But if he isn't charged, and again, that's not to say he's innocent, but if he isn't charged, I would be interested to see what the blowback of the NHL might be. Because honestly, I still think that what they did at the end of the day is sort of unassailable. I mean, he could come after him in a number of different ways for, like you mentioned yesterday, man games lost vis-a-vis his pension and things of that mm-hmm. nature. But from a PR perspective, from a public reaction perspective, are any of us going to lash out at the NHL and say that they were too hair trigger and overreactionary for what they did if it turns out he's not charged?
There are many that will say how they handled the Semyon Varlamov case was how you do it. You let the legal system play itself out, and then you make your decisions. There will be a sizable amount of people that say that. Mm. And many of them will be lawyers who say, listen, man, this is an accusation. It's all it is right now. And an overreaction based on a fear of negative publicity based on what the NFL went through. And you can tell that the NHL, listen, it was going to happen in the NHL eventually. And you knew that this was going to be the plan. And listen, when Strombo interviewed the commissioner at the Canadian club, I think it was one of the first questions as well. And you could tell that, I mean, every single sports league, when they saw what Roger Goodell went through, said, okay, that can't be us. Because the NFL can withstand it. Because the NFL can ride it out. It's bad publicity. But you know what? Here comes the weekend. Here comes Sunday. Here comes Monday. Like, they can ride it out because no one's leaving that product. Other sports don't have that luxury. And you can tell that that's like right away, right or wrong, this is how we're going to handle things.
Yeah. It sets a precedent. It's interesting. And like CJ wrote, other leagues are looking at this situation and really seeing how it all plays out with the NHL. I don't know. It's interesting. I read the lawyer thing that Nick did, and read the Q&A. It's a bunch of really great questions from Nick, and true pro that he is. I don't think he necessarily frames it as accusatory, but more along the lines of playing devil's advocate at times and saying, well, you know, this is what the perception is going to be. What do you say to that? And each time getting mm-hmm. the response. I found it to be infuriating just because of the amount of detail that he came forth with, but then putting on the brakes before actually getting to any honest explanation of how things went down, and then relying on, well, it's an open investigation. I mean, it's an open investigation, but we can clearly rule out that he hit her.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
You know what
I mean? One thing I can tell you for sure.
Yeah, the one thing I can tell you for sure is that he didn't hit her. Well, what happened to her? Maybe something else. Oh, I don't know.
It's an investigation. You know, we'll have to see how
this ongoing investigation.
Knowing full well that in his hip pocket, the two have probably reconciled and just want to put this behind them. And that's a frustrating thing. Like, I have plenty of people. I have plenty of friends. One that I see every day when I drop my son off at JK, one of my best friends there is an officer. And we were talking about this the other day when it happened. He said, it's frustrating because you want to do something, you want to help, but 9 times out of 10, they go back.
Yeah.
Or they'll end up defending them.
Yep.
It's frustrating. You feel like you can't. It comes to a point where you just don't want to answer domestics. Because how it's going to play out.
Yeah, and every indication we've gotten is that the conversation that he had with the victim was him and the interpreter that he had, and no one from her family, nobody from the state, nobody else there to counsel her, and instead it's that thing. So it's a nasty situation in all angles. But it does come down to whether or not he's charged. And it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
But I don't think it'll be interesting to see what happens.
It'll
also be interesting to see what happens the next time a player is, and we've seen this happen and get dismissed almost immediately or within a month or so. The next time a player is charged with something or is accused of something, whether it's violence at a nightclub, whether it's something sexual. And we've seen plenty. Listen, the thing about athletes is, generally, when you get to this level, you're very rich. What does rich attract? Rich attracts crazy. Rich attracts people that are on the slide. I mean, how many players have you talked to who are like, oh man, I should never have married that person because all they did was take me for a ride and take half my cash? Money attracts crazy. And you're young, and you don't know, and what's this person's motivation, and why are we in this relationship? It's not that uncommon to have players accused of wrongdoing for someone that has skin in the game and is trying to get something out of a player. Like, how many times have you seen that wish? Guys in the NHL go through it every single year. Mm-hmm. What's the response now? Is it automatically suspended indefinitely? When all you have is an accusation?
You'd think it'd have to be, wouldn't you?
There's the precedent.
Well, you come back to the one of the main drivers of this whole thing, which is that what did the NHL see? What is it that they saw in those photos?
I was told that the photos are disgusting.
The living yep. shit out of them and made them think that this is going to be Ray Rice part deux.
Yep, 100%. 100%. I'm cutting the NHL like tons of slack on this one. Because from what I was told, it sounds gruesome.
If you read between the lines on what Bill Daly has said publicly on this, and he's only said a few things publicly about it, he said that there were different conditions now than with the Varlamov thing. And I'm guessing that it's not just simply acknowledging the times have changed because of what happened to the NFL, but also that they had ample evidence within hours of the incident, that changed things. All right, listen, we're going to do a bit more Voinov with Chris Johnston now and also talk about the postponement of this Leafs Senators game. CJ, of course, as you know, is the leading newsbreaker for Sportsnet. All due respect to Elliot Friedman, who's a fine gentleman. But Chris Johnston, for me, is really Jeff Merrick, the insider of insiders.
Nope, that's our guy, and he also runs marathons. How are you, CJ?
Doing well, all things considered.
Yeah, now you're on your way to Buffalo to watch the Niagara Erie game. Oh, why is Connor McDavid playing a game in Buffalo? But first, the NHL really did have no choice other than to postpone today's game between the Sens and the Maple Leafs, right?
Absolutely no choice. I mean, I think it took some time perhaps to sink in for some people about how serious the situation is and how, clearly it's terrorist activity and a very symbolic and great part of our nation's capital where there happens to be a hockey game scheduled. So I don't think that there was any decision to be made once everything kind of sunk in there, it'll be interesting to see, how long they go at, before we see a sporting event play in Ottawa. I mean, the situation's still ongoing as we're talking now, but, it's one that hit very close to home for the Leafs, being very, very closely there staying, basically, very, very close to where the shooting happened, and, it's a situation that, I think the NHL didn't really, wasn't much thought that I'd be going to do it once it became clear what exactly was going on.
Yeah, the Leafs basically were in a hotel right across from the War Memorial or something along those lines, staying at a Westin or something like that. From what you've been able to gather about them today, they were in lockdown during all this?
Yeah, as we're talking now in the middle of the afternoon, in case anyone's listening later on the podcast, I mean, they still haven't left their hotel. They haven't been able to. And, I know some of the players heard the gunshots. I mean, literally, I've stayed in that hotel. With the party as big as the Leafs would be, some people would have rooms where you could just look out your window and you'd be looking right at the War Memorial, where unfortunately a Canadian soldier was killed today. So, it will have hit very close to home for the Leafs. And I imagine, I haven't spoken directly to any of the players, but I imagine, some of them might be shaken up by this. And that I'm sure was part of the decision making. But even if they weren't so close, I can't imagine that you'd hold a hockey game, after something like that happening.
Yeah, and we've both Greg and I, and maybe you have as well, CJ, receiving numerous tweets about, if you don't play the game, the terrorists win, or that's what these animals want, and how can they not play the game? We need to let them know that our way of life won't be compromised. I mean, right now in Ottawa, CJ, and you know what Ottawa's like, it is a parliamentary town. Like, let them grieve. Like, give them a chance to catch their breath here today.
Well, exactly. And are you going to ask 19,000 people to come to a hockey game, some of whom or many of whom are still locked down as we speak now? It's only 4.5 hours from when the game was supposed to start. I mean, it makes no sense. I mean, I agree. I guess that's the notion. And the sentiment in general, I can't agree with, that you don't let these sort of actions affect the way you live and the way you behave. Because, I agree with that in some ways. I lived in London, England. In 2005, when there was subway bombings there and a bus bombing, in fact, on the bus route that I took to work at that time. And, one thing I learned from being there where, obviously that's a city and an area of the world where they're used to having wars a little bit more on their doorstep and incidents happening than I believe we are in North America, is that a lot of people did carry on and the city didn't completely come to a stop. But, in Ottawa, it's a different situation. It's unfamiliar to people and with it still being something that's going on as we speak, I just don't imagine how you can contemplate having a sporting event to mean anything. I think it'll still be an emotional moment whenever the Senators' next play game in that city in O'Canada is done beforehand.
For sure. Moving over to the Slava Voynov thing, you had a very insightful piece on sportsnet.ca that I recommend everybody give a read. What have you learned about Slava Voynov vis-a-vis what the cap implications might be for the Los Angeles Kings?
Well, really, the NHL's in unfamiliar territory here with this issue. And I agreed, and I think many observers did, with the decision, just given the landscape of pro sports that Gary Bettman made. When he indefinitely suspended Slava Voynov as soon as, the league became aware of this happening. But, there's a lot of, potential issues here that are still being sorted out, that still need to be sorted out as they pertain to the cap and the situation. Because, as short and concise as I can be, right now he's being paid while being suspended because, the NHL wants to give him his presumed innocence while it collects more facts. But as a result of that, he also remains on the LA Kings salary cap situation, which, is okay, I guess, for a couple days. But, I don't think they can leave him there in limbo for too long because, at least that the Kings have only $500,000, give or take, to maneuver with. And if this goes on a long time, which, Slava Voynov's not meant to appear in court until December 1st, there's 18 games LA has to play between then and now. And the league really has to figure out how it's going to handle this. I mean, if they take him off the cap, for example, now if they suspend him without pay, but he's later found guilty in a court of law, how is that handled? If he's forced to stay on and is later found innocent or is not proven to be guilty in court, it's a very difficult situation for the league when you're trying to make these decisions without having any legal help, essentially, without knowing what's going to happen or what's going to come out in court. And I still think that's something that the Kings want answers on, and the league is working through with its lawyers and its security staff as part of the investigation they're doing into the Voynov case.
And CJ, one of the issues that I brought up here on the podcast the last couple of days from the Slava Voynov point of view, If at the end of it all he's found not guilty, and this drags on for months, these are all games that he's lost. And as you know, there's a magic number, and I want to say it's 400, CJ. I should have checked last night, but I didn't. 400 to receive full pension from the NHL. What's the dispensation for Slava Voynov should he miss, like, let's say 35 or 40 games? Those are 35 or 40 games that he doesn't have to go towards hitting his magic number of 400 to get his full compensation, or sorry, his full pension.
Exactly. And actually, Jeff, the pension rules were changed in this latest CBA that was just signed. And basically, players get a percentage of a season in terms of service. So I believe the number is they get $22,000 a year in their pension per full year of service. So would that affect that? I mean, does he get a half share then if he only ends up playing half the season? I mean, there's a lot of different issues here that would have to be sorted that affect the Kings, that affect Voynov personally. And, you know, I don't think in a lot of cases, as we sit here right now, without knowing the facts, you know, I know Voynov's lawyer has come out and said that there wasn't a crime committed here. And obviously, we don't know the validity of that at this point. But it's hard to determine right and wrong when the situation is ongoing. And I think, you know, the league clearly is wanting to be proactive. You know, I think, as always, they want to be fair. And you know, I'm not sure that there's a way to guarantee you're doing that in real time, because, you know, if this continues on, if, you know, the district attorney down there in California ends up pursuing charges, there haven't yet been charges laid as far as I've last heard, you know, this could drag on legally for quite some time, and Voynov might be forced to sit out, and there will be potential for appeals and legal action as a result of that, just because, you know, this is an unusual situation. I think this is why Varlamov, for example, last year, the NHL waited for the legal ramifications to become clear before deciding what to do. And in that case, the charges being dropped at least for their penalized.
That makes sense. Hey, CJ, if he's exonerated, let's say, if there's no exonerated, but if there's no charges levied against him, do you think that the NHL is going to go full stop and not be so hair trigger the next time with a suspension, or do you think this is going to be the policy going forward, no matter how this shakes out?
I think it'll still be the policy, at least in the near future, if this were to happen again. I think by suspending him with a, you're being as fair as you can be, because, you know, you're acknowledging that there's been an arrest under an assumption of this, you know, potentially serious crime. And, you know, you want to collect more facts before deciding what you're going to do. But you're also taking away his ability to play in case, you know, it is a matter that warrants more attention. And I think, you know, that is the way to go for now. But, you know, this is very much still developing. And I do think that this case will be instructive in the future, not only for the NHL, but for the other sports leagues, depending how it develops. And you know, right now it's impossible to say, you know, perhaps everything will be dropped. If Voynov's lawyer is telling the truth and if there's evidence to support that, perhaps there'll be no legal action taken here, and in a relatively short order, he'll be reinstated. I mean, that you can't rule it out as a possibility, but there's also a chance it drags on for quite some time, and you know, that'll be the real test of the league. If they continue to keep him from being able to play, from being around the team, engage in activities, and then, you know, furthermore, if he's kept from being paid, because, you know, the pay is significant, because if the NHL were to suspend him, for example, without pay, and he was never charged with anything, I think that he would have a case for a defamation lawsuit in that case. I mean, I'm no legal expert on this, but clearly there's a lot of potential issues here, and again, as I was trying to stress earlier, I'm not sure there's a right answer in real time right now as we're sitting looking at this.
The precedent here is an interesting and potentially dangerous one, we all assume, for the NHL, CJ. And I go back to Drew Doughty, for example, who was once upon a time accused of sexual assault, also represented, we should point out, by Craig Ranetsky, the same lawyer who's representing Slava Voynov. Are we to assume then that the initial response from the NHL, if we go back to Doughty, would have been the same as it was with Voynov before anything's been tested? A suspension, an indefinite suspension, occurs immediately.
Well, that, you know, it's a good point. It's a question I don't have the answer to. I mean, obviously, you know, spousal abuse, domestic abuse has been in the news and been really at the forefront of attention because of what's happening in the NFL. But, you know, if this is the course of action going forward, I mean, how, where else does it extend? What level of crime, potential crime, the suggestion of crime and arrest, you know, warrants an automatic suspension? And how long, you know, must the player sit out before, you know how it's going to be handled? I mean, you're right, the ramifications here are huge. And from what I remember, that Doughty case, and I haven't looked into it in the last few days, so I may not be totally sharp on all the details, but, you know, in that case, it went on for some time, and ultimately it was shown that not only, you know, was Doughty, you know, not guilty of anything, that he may have, in fact, been a victim of some false claims against him and an attempt, perhaps, to extort some money from him or something along those lines. I mean, in that case, if he had also been suspended by the league, I mean, that would have been, you know, piling on in a situation where, you know, really there was no wrongdoing. And I think that is what makes it difficult. But, you know, the sort of climate, if you will, around pro sports right now is, I think, you know, these leagues can't be seen to be tolerating anything, and they can't be seen to be not being on top of issues, not, you know, standing for something. And that's where the NFL got in trouble with the Ray Rice situation.
CJ, I want to end with some sunshine and rainbows on this day.
Okay.
Where would you like to see Connor McDavid play hockey in the National Hockey League? If you had the power to pick one of the teams that we believe will be in the lottery and place him on that team, where would you like him to play?
Well, selfishly, the only answer is Buffalo, because I live in Toronto, and I'm on my way there right now. I can drive there any given day to watch a game, and you know, even spending the last 10 years or so was so close to Pittsburgh. I've been, you know, fortunate to spend a lot of time around Sidney Crosby, and for those same reasons, I would like it to be the Sabres. You know, but you know, if you expand it, maybe a Canadian city, maybe Winnipeg will find itself in the mix. I mean, I think that would be my second favorite choice, just because, you know, I love going there to watch games. I also, you know, have a lot of respect for the Jets organization and the way they try to do business, and basically how difficult, frankly, it's going to be for them to be competitive, that it would be a real game changer if someone of, you know, this kind of talent played in a Canadian city. But, you know, selfishly, as I say, I want to be able to watch McDavid play a lot more than just tonight in some Buffaloes, and it's the best answer for me.
Yeah, because he really is as advertised. CJ, thanks so much for stopping by and sharing your expertise. Great piece at sportsnet.ca.
Thanks, guys, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
We'll chat soon. Chris Johnston from Sportsnet.ca on his way to Buffalo to the Effin Center to go check out Connor McDavid and the Erie Otters. They face off against the Niagara Ice Puppies.
A slow pivot back to hockey news.
There is some.
A lot happened last night, and we should probably talk about some of it. I was at Devils Rangers, and I have to admit I was stunned to see something at Devils Rangers that I had never seen before. No, not the Devils blowing a third period lead. I've seen that plenty. I have never seen as many empty seats in the upper deck.
Okay, I was going to ask about that. Was it 14,000?
Yeah.
Last night at the Rock?
Yeah.
How do you not draw more? I know we all like to jump on Florida. Ha ha ha. Look at how do you not draw more than 14,000 for the Battle of the Hudson?
Well, I'm glad you asked.
Okay.
So from what I gather in talking to some people last night, the Devils changed their ticket price policy. And they went with variable pricing for the Rangers games and also doing variable pricing for Friday night's game against Dallas, because that is Chico Resch night. They're honoring Chico.
Right, Chico Eats.
I joked to Steve Lepore that they should do a bobblehead that has him going down on a Premio sausage because he loves to eat the sausages so much during games.
Oh, jeez.
Anyway, so the Devils raised the prices of their upper deck tickets, and it's a completely different vibe than in the past. In the past, you would see games where not a single seat could be found in the upper deck. Everything sold out. And down in the lower bowl, there were, you know, empty rows in every section. Last night, you had sections where there was only like 10 people in them. And meanwhile, the rest of the arena was, you know, spottily attended. Mm-hmm. I guess this new policy is trying to maximize the profit. No more $10 tickets for the Devils Rangers games. But the atmosphere last night in that arena was so different because of the lack of cheap seaters there than a Devils Rangers game that I can remember. It had a late season, one of these teams has already been eliminated vibe until the latter part of the third period when business really picked up. And it's directly related to them overcharging for the tickets upstairs and driving people out of the arena for that game.
Now, there were a lot of games to watch last night, and that game was one that I didn't find my thumb on the clicker, mainly because I think I thought that you would have it covered off for the sake of the podcast today. What was your big takeaway from yesterday's game?
In the Devils game?
Yeah.
Oh, God. That the Rangers know how to win, and that was a real confidence builder for him. That the puck is finding Rick Nash in ways that it didn't during the playoffs.
I saw that highlight. Yep. Now, mind you, did you see where Nash was when he scored the goal?
Yeah, he was standing right in the slot.
Right? Skating into the slot area to score the goal. What didn't he do during the playoffs last year coming off the concussion?
Well, let's talk about that. The conky issue, as you would likely call it, was an issue for him.
Oh, so insensitive. So insensitive, Greg.
He admitted it as such during the preseason. But I talked to Nash last night. I got one thing you need to know. He's a big guy. He's always had a little bit of baby fat on him. He does not. He looks in better shape than I've ever seen him before, and I've covered him for years. And he says that's just to increase running during the off season, increase sprinting, trying to get his speed up. He looks great.
Is he down a couple Toledos?
He looks very much so. Very leaner. And two other things. First off, like you said, there's a fearlessness to his game. He's crashed a couple goalies this season already. He's playing more in the slot, being a bit more fearless with it. And the other aspect of it that I mean, 8 goals in 7 games is ridiculous pace. It's obviously not going to be sustained. But you're a father, and I'm a father.
Yep.
And Rick Nash became a father 2 weeks ago, or maybe last week, last Sunday maybe. That's a big deal.
Hey, I'll tell you, when TJ was born, he was born at 7:30 in the morning, and I had a game that afternoon, that Sunday at 2, and Claire insisted that I go. She's like, we're fine. Get out of here. Go play hockey. You've been up for 36 hours or whatever. Claire and T just wanted to have a nap. Scored 2 goals. So I can understand where Rick Nash is coming from. Take my little men's league example.
Yeah.
Extrapolate to the NHL.
he's tried to shut down discussion of the child's impact on his hockey life. He's tried to shut that down a little bit. Let's think about this logically, parents, okay? By my math, she would have been pregnant during the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
By my math, she would have been, what, about 4 months into it when they were in the cup final? That's a tense time. And then you have Rick Nash having the birth of his child happen a couple weeks ago. And when you get close to it, and then when it finally happens, life is reordered. Life is different. And honestly, I'm telling you, I there's no way to prove this unless Nash actually like sits down on the couch and gets – you know, analyze one day. But it reorders your life. It adds clarity. All of a sudden, those restless nights that you've had thinking, if only I had put the puck in the net despite doing everything else my coach asked me to do in that series.
Yeah.
It just becomes a little less weighing on you when you have a kid because now your life has a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you've seen it before. Now, finally, I realize why I'm here. Now, all of a sudden, something comes into a circle, right? It happens more. I think it's a lot stronger, obviously, with the woman than it is for the man, because there's a more sort of natural rhythm and a natural cycle that happens within your body. The man is still part of it, but really, I mean, your job's over pretty fast. And after that, just provide support.
Right.
You know, make the dinners, rub the feet, like, and be a good husband, boyfriend, partner, whatever. But my question for what'll happen with Rick Nash's career, I wonder if, let's just say Rick Nash and the New York Rangers don't make the Stanley Cup final again, as long as he's a Ranger. And let's say that Rick Nash never makes the Stanley Cup final again in his career. I wonder if he looks back and says to him and looks back at it and looks at it as if it was a blown opportunity. That he wasn't playing. You know what I mean? Like, I still had all this game in me, and because of whatever life distraction, reprioritization of my life, fear of, you know, going back to having to sit in a dark room all day because of concussion issues. You know, I mean, I can recall when the when the Blackhawks won their Stanley Cup in 2000 and was it 10? Yeah, 2010. Mm-hmm. I remember going back and reading interviews with Blackhawks players from 1961, the Litzenberger team, the last time the Chicago won the Cup previous to that. And almost to a person, there was, in every interview and in every answer, there was this vibe of, yeah, we won the Stanley Cup in 61, and we're going to win a handful more. Like, when you get there, you almost feel like, oh, yeah, this cup is just going to continue to overflow. I'm going to keep going back to the Stanley Cup final. And I thought about all those guys. Like, they never went back. Like, all that entire team never went back to the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah.
But if you read the interviews and listen to the interviews, you can go to listen to them online, there is very much, to a person, the expectation that this is the first of many Stanley Cups for them.
Right.
They didn't win another cup till 2010, and that was 1961.
Yeah. Well, that's why I thought, you know, it's always good to get knocked out. A dynasty sometimes need to get knocked on their asses. And the Devils getting knocked on their ass in 96 was important. It was important for them to get knocked on their ass. They didn't win again until 2000, but, I think it was important to get knocked on their ass, or, you know, whenever it was.
Look at the best example is the 83 Oilers. I know it's been cited time and time again, but the 83 Oilers, I mean, those rock star Oilers, you know, got beaten by the old men, those old New York Islanders, those old dogs, and they all, you know, the old story in Gretzky's book, we walked by the Islanders' dressing room, and, you know, there wasn't a big, huge celebration. You know, everyone was aching and sore, and there were ice bags everywhere, and that's when we realized what you have to do to win the Stanley Cup.
Mountains of Coke.
Call.
Oh, wait.
It was the 80s. Come on. They were young. What are you going to do? Cocaine? Oh, I hate cocaine. Sure, I love the way it smells. So, Randy Dangerfield line there.
Oh, that was Robin Williams. That's definitely Robin Williams' line.
I thought it was Randy Dangerfield.
We'll leave it to the listeners. Two things before we get to the mailbag segment, as we're calling it today. Goalie interference visited upon us last night, Jeff Merrick,
in
two specific cases.
Okay, I agreed with the Montreal one, but man, that call on Nick Bjugstad last night. Holy crap, I couldn't believe my...
If you've not seen either of them, let's start with the Bjugstad one. That's when he makes an amazing move, coming out from behind the net, stopping on a dime, basically, circling, curling back in, and then going to the goal. Ritu Berra stretches out with his stick in an attempt to poke check him. He then flies over Berra's outstretched pad and then gets a goalie interference penalty for it.
Yeah. Figure that one out. Figure that one out. Now, if you believe in hockey karma, it was swift. Yesterday in that game, as in overtime, Brad Stewart, I want to say, tapped, barely tugged, if at all, Alexander Barkov behind the net. And boy, did he take one off the 3-meter springboard.
Oh, yeah.
He just went down, lightest you will ever see Barkov go down. That drew the penalty. That set up the game-winning goal by the Florida Panthers. So if you believe in hockey karma, yesterday was a game for you for the Florida Panthers and the Colorado Avalanche. Holy smokes.
Yeah.
Man, Barkov. It's like the Patch Ready call yesterday. I mean, you got nicked for diving, too. There's that moment where you can see them. It's subtle, but you watch the skates and you watch them do that little leap, you can only do it if you're trying to do it. Like when a player goes down, it can kind of look like Bambi. That's how you kind of know it's really tripping or it's really hooking. But when the feet are together and they're in unison when they jump in the air and there's no spreading of the leg, listen, if I'm the NHL, I may want to have a word with Barkov about that moment. And Stewart knew it right away. He knew he was going and he knew he was a victim. He just got conned into a dive because you see him going to the penalty box. He's like, you got to be kidding me. I barely touched his hip, but you saw stick on hip. You saw a player go down. Maybe you're thinking that Meyer blew the Bjugstad call, and you say, "All right, sit down." And there was hockey karma.
Well, that was Meyer.
It's Brad Meyer.
I thought he was
the American. Well, that's what the Russians wanted to do to him after the disallowed goal in Sochi.
Yeah, the tournament of soap.
Soap. Yeah, that's lovely.
What is Russian? What is Russian for Tyler Durden? We turn him into soap.
The other call, you thought it was a good call. Hold on. Let's rephrase that. You probably agree with me that the rule allows for goaltenders to pull this shit, is the interpretation, right?
Yeah, because the player in question was in the crease.
Oh, so you think that that protection should be there for the goaltender?
I go back and forth on it. I really do. I honestly am the worst person to ask about it because my opinion changes almost daily on it.
Well, because the way I saw it was that Abdelkader was by the crease. I don't even think he was in the crease. He was near.
He kind of looked in the crease to me. But here's the thing. Like even if that play goes to video review,
yeah.
that's still apt to interpretation.
It is.
Like everyone's like, oh, if there's a coach's challenge, that gets settled. Oh no, it doesn't. Because you, me, anyone else listening to this podcast, let's say there's, how many people do you think are listening to this podcast? 4? So all 6 of us could watch that exact play, and there would be no consensus.
There might not be consensus, but here's the thing. In real time, I don't think you can fault the referees for making that call in real time, without question. Guys crowd in the crease, you see Carey Price kind of flailing back to get the puck. Your assumption in that moment is that it's goalie interference, no goal. I'm okay with it, except for the fact that it ruined a Pavel Datsyuk masterpiece. Now,
oh my God, that was beautiful. But hang on. But having said that, you look where Datsyuk put the puck.
Uh-huh.
He put the puck,
exactly
where Carey Price's glove was going to be. And if you look at the replay, what happened to Carey Price's left arm the moment he touched Abdelkader? The left arm went down. I'm not so sure that Datsyuk would have scored if he wasn't interfered with. It looked gorgeous. It was beautiful. But
it's
a Carey Price with his hand on his hip.
When you say he was interfered with. That's the tricky part.
That's the tricky part. I know. Did Price initiate the interference? Oh boy, you could make a good argument that he did.
Quite frankly, Jeff Merrick, when I see the replay, if I was in the NHL war room, my interpretation would be that Carey Price is nuzzling up next to Abdelkader's hip like a fucking kitten, okay? And this is the problem with the rule, is that he's allowed to do that, and then the call goes against the attacking team, and he's pulled this trick more than once. And so, hey, listen, you know me and goalies. I hate the overprotection of goalies. I hate the goalie is not fair game rule where he's out of his crease. I mean, you could literally have him skating up ice and you couldn't touch him because he's not fair game. So this one's a little bit tough for me to handle. But again, the law is the flaw. It's not on the referees. The referees interpreted the play as they should have without the benefit of a coach's challenge and with the rule being very sort of vague when it comes to plays in which the goaltender initiates contact, then there's nothing you can do. They had to wave off the goal last night.
You know what's a leftover rule that's supposed to quote-unquote protect goaltenders? That's really kind of bugged me for a long time. You know when the whistle blows and the player still shoots the puck and everyone's got to go and attack that player? That rule was there when goaltenders, didn't have masks. When the goaltenders really didn't have that much protection. But goaltenders now are the Michelin man. And how many times have you ever seen a goaltender injured when a player, half a second after the whistle goes, fires a puck at the goalie?
Yeah.
It never happens. But it's a holdover sort of unwritten rule that if guy takes a shot at your goaltender after the whistle, he needs to get his head pounded because we're protecting the goaltender. It's this unwritten rule that started when goaltenders didn't have high level equipment. Well, you know what? They do now. And when have we seen a goaltender hurt from a guy shooting a puck a split second after a whistle? Doesn't happen. It's a holdover.
It is.
Just been part of it for how long? As long as the game's been played.
Goalies are overprotected, and we need a coach's challenge tomorrow. That's my verdict.
Okay, but the thing is, I don't disagree with you, but I think the coach's challenge in this situation, if you were going to throw the flag, if you're Mike Babcock, I don't even think that you would get it's not a guarantee that you would get the answer, you would get the call in your favor, because that is still an interpretation.
At the very least, you'd have a fail-safe that can look at a play in slow motion versus real time, and maybe you get a different verdict that way. I don't know.
Maybe. At that time of the game, of course, because it's late in the third. At that time of the game, yeah, man, throw it. Go for it, for sure.
Exactly. All right, it's now time for a Wednesday favorite. Is he not going to play the intro because it has those words in it?
I don't know. I don't know.
Do you want to do a mailbag segment?
Oh, there it is.
It's time to look deep into the souls of Jeff Merrick and Greg Wyshynski.
Maybe it doesn't have the words in it. Whoa.
I think it does.
Not that deep.
We answer your mail.
PuckDaddyBlog at yahoo.com. On Twitter at Jeff Merrick and at Wyshynski. We're going postal on Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Beep, 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 boop, beep, beep, beep. Don't send the hate tweets. Boop, beep. Beep, 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 beep,
beep. Oh, you sound like the Price is Right wheel when it almost gets done spinning.
Oh, I hope we take Mark Cole's email today about Oxbaker speaking of the Price is Right. I don't know how I missed that. Let me start us off today on
please do.
On the mailbag segment. Mark Cole, Oxbaker, memories of Oxbaker, 1, as a worker, 2, escape from New York, 3, on Price is Right. I can only speak to 1 and 3. I can't speak to 2 because, surprise, surprise, I haven't seen it.
I can speak to 2. He was awesome in it, as was everybody.
Was he good?
New York is a classic.
I know. I got to see a lot of movies. On The Price is Right, I was only smartened up to this when Mark Cole sent us that link. I loved it. If you haven't seen it, go type in Price is Right and Oxbaker. And as far as a worker goes, I was a kid when I first saw Oxbaker. I think it was when he came to Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, and I had never heard of this thing called the Heart Punch. But for years, I believe, because of Oxbaker, that if you held a guy's arm back and punched him in the heart, he could die. Because that's what Oxbaker did to people.
Wow.
With the Heart Punch.
The Heart Punch.
The Heart Punch. Oxbaker.
Who else had the Heart Punch? Was it Stan Stasiak had the Heart Punch?
Does Stan Stasiak have a heart? Well, let's have a look here. That's what the internet's for.
Yeah.
This is an exciting part of the day.
Heart punch. Ryan Griffin writes in, I'm traveling to Toronto tomorrow for work for a few days. What restaurants would each of you recommend? Well, I'd recommend my favorite bar in Toronto, Say What.
Yeah, you do love Say What.
I love that place. They got good food there, too. So I would say that. Do you have a favorite restaurant, Jeffy, in Toronto?
I do. My favorite is Feel Good Guru on Queen Street across from Trinity Bellwoods Park. But you got to be raw vegan to dig it, yo. 668 on Dundas is great, too. I love that one.
I'll go in the opposite direction, Ryan. If you're awake and drunk and it's about 2 in the morning, walk to the water. Just walk straight to the water, to the Weston Harbor Castle. Make a left. You'll see a little gyro place. Go inside.
I don't think anyone's ever been
eat the gyro.
I don't think anyone's ever been served sober in that place. Oh, by the way, Stan Stasiak. And you're right. Stan Stasiak, master of the heart punch as well. Good job.
Yes. Well, get the gyro from the little place by the Harbor Castle, and your life will change. It's the best drunk food available in Toronto.
They only serve you if you're intoxicated. Right. You have to blow into a breathalyzer, and if you blow under, you don't get the food.
This is from R.M. Cooper, writes in. Curious, Jeff. I've been reading Steve Simmons' book on Mike Danton.
Yep.
Do you think Sheldon Keefe will ever get an NHL coaching job someday?
I do. 100% I do. Specifically when you look at the work that he's done, not just with the Pembroke Lumber Kings, and he wasn't just, I mean, he ran everything with the Pembroke Lumber Kings, and that turned that storied franchise into a powerhouse at that level of junior hockey, and what he's done with the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds. And, you know, part of the resume is going to be, you know, he is going to be representative of the finishing school for players such as Darnell Nurse, and Sergei Tolchinsky, and, you know, countless other Nick Cousins, other Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds players that have come out. And he has done, and I know it was not exactly well received around the OHL, specifically, obviously, what happened with the Barry Colts when they went to the Memorial Cup. But you have to admit, Sheldon Keefe has done an amazing job with that program. And as anyone who's listened to this program knows, I'm a huge second chance guy. And so far, Keefe has taken the ball and done the Heisman with it. I think this, and if I had a vote for it last year, I would have voted Sheldon Keefe the coach of the year in the OHL. And so far, I would do so right now. So yes, I think one day down the road, Sheldon Keefe does coach in the National Hockey League.
And a follow-up question that I think is worth asking, because I don't know this story. What was it like being on the radio the day Mike Jefferson was arrested when he was supposed to do an interview with you?
Mike was never supposed to do an interview with us the day that he was arrested. We spoke to his father. Talking about Mike Danton's dad, Steve Jefferson?
I don't know.
Mike was never supposed to interview with us that day. It was the St. Louis San Jose series. I found out when the rest of the world found out, which is when Peter Mansbridge at CBC, I think Ron McLean may have broken into Hockey Night in Canada. He threw to Peter Mansbridge at the national desk. But no, Mike was never supposed to do an interview with us that day. We spoke with Steve Jefferson shortly thereafter, who is the father. And actually, I kind of became a little bit close over the next couple of years as the show that I was on with Bill Waters really followed the case closely. So did Andy Strickland when he was working for KMOX. But no, Mike was never supposed to come on the show. It was only after he was let out of Fort Dix in New Jersey that I had any sort of dealing with Mike, other than talking to him at the draft one year and maybe one time when he played with the New Jersey Devils. But I didn't really know Mike until everything happened with the David Frost situation, and then was released from federal prison.
Johnny Fabrazzo writes in, Shaken
it's a good
or
book,
Stirred?
By the way. Good book, by the way. Good book, by the way. Sorry, go ahead.
The Simmons book?
Yeah.
Shaken or Stirred, sir?
For martinis?
I go Shaken. I drink a lot of vodka martinis, and I always like when you get little bits of ice chip in there. Really kind of make it almost like you're drinking it at some ice hotel in Finland. or wherever the hell they have ice hotels. I go Shaken.
Not much. I can't even remember the last time I had a martini, to be honest with you. What I've been drinking lately, and again, I don't really drink a whole ton. I like wine. But Black Russians. Oh, boy. I do like a Black Russian when I come home.
Jeff and I both shake our beer, though, before we drink it.
Yeah.
Really make it a celebration.
Follow the advice of what Major League Baseball does every year. They remind you to please drink responsibly while chugging 8 beers at a time. Stone Cold style.
Two more real quick. Braden Holock writes in, longtime listener, second time writer. Can you see a blockbuster trade happening on draft day involving Connor McDavid and the first overall pick?
Nope.
So the question is, could we have a Lindros trade on opening day at the draft?
No, because I think Connor McDavid will go wherever and go to whichever city drafts him. He'll go to whichever team.
Right.
And he's been consistent with that, and his father Brian has as well. So McDavid's going wherever he gets drafted.
Right. So the catalyst for that, obviously, is, you know, if he didn't want to go someplace, then there'd be a trade. But he probably will go wherever he's drafted, and that'll be that.
Yeah. That's why I don't think it'll be a Lindros situation. Yeah. And he'll go anywhere. Honestly, I don't listen. Jeff, there are plenty of people that said he would never A, go to Erie, wrong. B, stay in Erie, wrong again.
Jeff Peppers on the MVSW Reddit page writes in. One, do you think a hologram Bill Masterton costume is feasible? I think it's feasible. I just don't think anyone would get it. But it does bring up an interesting point, which is that if we, as the MVSW meetups and live podcasts, everything continue to grow, and the next one obviously is going to be, you know, even bigger than the last, we would like to see some of you come in costume. Come as Littlest Hobo. Come as hologram Bill Masterton. Come as a baby bear with shampoo.
Baby bear? Yep. Oh, I'd love to see that. That'd be a good one. We're not going to turn this into Star Trek, are we? Everyone comes up, or Star Wars. Everyone dresses as their character.
Oh yeah. You've completely sussed out my intention to turn every MVSW live podcast into our own mini Comic Con.
Why is Steve Lepora dressed like Lou Lamoriello? What's going on here?
Oh, the skull cap.
Why is Tally Duchesne dressed like Brian Burke?
Oh, Tally Duchesne would totally dress like the Atlanta Thrasher mascot, right? To keep that alive?
Yep, she could. I can see it.
Jeff Peppers also writes in, what are you guys going to be for Halloween? If you don't want to divulge this, what are your kids going to be for Halloween? I think I'll be tending the work bar in a gorilla suit and hobbit feet. I don't actually work at a bar, so this is a relatively casual thing. I don't have a costume yet, and I need to get a costume because Ruby and I are going to a costume thing next Friday, so I don't have one in mind quite yet. My daughter is obviously like the rest of every girl between the ages of 2 and 7 going as Elsa from
Princess.
Frozen.
Oh.
No, well, Elsa from Frozen is the Snow Queen. I mean, she technically was a princess. She's a Disney princess, so yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Oh, by the way, are you kids dressing up for Halloween or no?
Yeah, Brody wanted to be a pumpkin, so we got him a pumpkin outfit, and he insisted on wearing it while we carved pumpkins last week, and now TJ wants to go as a pumpkin. Although originally he wanted to go as a ghost.
Mm. What about a ghost pumpkin?
Ooh, ghost pumpkin. Cool. That's pretty sweet, yeah.
Hey, I do want to report something. There won't be a show Friday, I can tell you that right now, because we're traveling. But the reason I'm traveling is very important. On Monday, I will give everyone a full report on what it's like for me, Greg Wyshynski, to attend Disney's Frozen on Ice.
Come on.
For a four-year-old. Oh, yeah.
That's awesome. Will you be, hang on. Will you be live tweeting set events?
That's possible. I don't know. That I feel like it needs to be quality time with Vivian, so I don't
know.
Think I'll be live tweeting it, but
I get that, but I will oh, that'd be so
definitely
to live tweet that.
I will definitely report back to you. I'll report back to you. I'll let you know if I successfully get a Ranger suck chant going at the arena. I mean, it is after all ice and ice skates. I do have certain Pavlovian responses. I will give you a full report on what it's like for me to attend Disney's Frozen on Ice with a four-year-old. By the way, the commercials for it tell me that the characters from Toy Story show up, which is going to – I mean, it's going to play out like an LSD trip for this kid. So, you know, watching the Frozen characters, all of a sudden Woody shows up. It's like, wow.
Yeah, I thought that – yeah, I took the kids – when we took them 2 summers ago to see the Wiggles. And I think to them, that was like watching, I know, it's so true, which was freaking insane, because TJ would have been, Brody would have been like 1, and TJ would have been, 3? That was maybe a little bit early for them.
As an aficionado of music, were you sort of just cowering your seat saying, this is terrible?
I just kept thinking to myself, how much money have these people raked in? Right? Like, if you're the brainchild behind the Wiggles, the amount of long, quiet dough you've put in your bank because kids lose their mind, right? It's Beatles at Shea Stadium for these kids. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't care about the music because the kids loved it. So if the kids loved it, all the kids were dancing and the dinosaur was giving out flowers or getting flowers. I don't know what the rules for the Wiggles are, but we had a ball at Hamilton Place.
I can read between the lines on what you're saying. They pulled
hang on. Melissa Bergeson says to your idea of people dressing up in costume. Funny you mention that. I have a plan to make myself a drunk Peter Puck costume one day. Oh, man, we ever do tweet up in Edmonton? No, Calgary. Melissa's in Calgary. In Calgary?
Melissa's in Calgary.
Melissa,
I think Melissa just guaranteed
we're going to do a
meetup in Calgary.
If someone's dressing up as a drunk Peter Puck, I'm there. We'll find a reason. She also says, if you like Black Russians, I have an excellent martini in my repertoire for you, and it's shaken. Ooh, nice. Send it along, Melissa.
Wait, we did drunk Peter Puck was a bit, wasn't it?
Oh, God, I can't. Did we do drunk Peter Puck? No, I don't think we did drunk Peter Puck. Why, you want
Maddie,
to start doing drunk Peter
Puck? Do you remember
Peter
that Puck? At all? Was that during the Josh years? During Elena years? I don't know. I feel like it was a bit we did. Almost like every bit we did. It's like, you know, one and done.
Except, I mean, Hologramville Masterton took on quite a life for a few weeks after that. So did the Baby Bear.
Well, Hologram Bill Masterton always makes an appearance when the NHL awards come around.
Oh, absolutely.
It's important. 100%. It's important to keep things in perspective. Oh, you had rickets? Well, I died. Oh, you slid into the post in Boston and shattered your leg?
Yep, we all know the hits. Yeah, no, it is. Bill Masterton is the perspective check for everybody. Absolutely. So to all you Masterton frauds out there, They're proud of your award. Only one man did something about it. It's the old Fred Shiro speech of the Philadelphia Flyers when he showed him a picture of bacon and eggs. And he said, "We talk a lot about contribution on this team. You guys talk a lot about I made a contribution. I had my man. I want to talk to you about my breakfast." And this breakfast tells you everything you need to know about being a Philadelphia Flyer. Because on this plate, the chicken made a contribution, but the pig made a commitment. And that's what I expect out of all of you.
All right. That's Love the show for today. Thanks to Chris Johnston for hopping on and doing a stellar job breaking down two very important stories.
Read his piece at Sportsnet.ca. It really is an interesting look at the ramifications of everything happening to Slava Voynov.
And then also, as we said, thoughts and prayers to the people of Ottawa for all of the stuff they're going through today. It's just a horrific situation. And I fully hope everybody does dive deep into social media and Twitter. And the tweets about how the U.S. media is covering this tragedy versus the CBC are priceless and extraordinarily accurate. CBC is like, you know, two dead in tragic gun violence in the Capitol. Mm-hmm. And then CNN's like, capital of tragedy, or whatever the hell they wrote. So please do look at that. It's very amusing.
Canada right, feels everybody. America's terror and horror. Melissa, by the way, says, yes, it was a bit, and that's what I was referencing. We did a Drunk Peter Puck bit? Oh, that's awesome. Can someone tell us what episode that was?
Sarah, Tomkinson writes in, Peter Puck has a wiki page, but not Wyszynski. Yep. March 20th is my birthday, folks. That's the next time that I expect somebody to make a Wikipedia page for me.
Go build your wiki. Just do it yourself.
I refuse.
Oh, by the way, I totally lifted something from Puck. Yeah. I totally lifted something from Puck Daddy yesterday.
What'd you do?
I put out when I saw the Renee Zellweger picture. I put out the your collage of the evolution of Brent Burns. So I just like to come clean. Say Renee Zellweger ain't got nothing on Brent Burns.
As being her?
Saying like, oh yeah, you may think Renee Zellweger has changed. Should go Brent Burns.
All right. That's pretty funny.
Totally ape that one. Yeah, thanks, man.
All right, everybody. We will see you on tomorrow. Thanks to CJ. And hopefully a bit more of the hockey talk on this hockey podcast and a little less of the...
Man, you know what? Okay,
tragedy and potential sexual assault, domestic violence charges.
We got to put down the bongs. You know why? Because we even have a tribute account for Drunk Peter Puck. Good Lord!
But you've got a bit of a catch 22 there, Merrick. If we put down the bongs, then there would be no Drunk Peter.
Fair enough. You know what? Fair. Fair point. The bongs remain. Pro bong. Pro bong.
The bongs. The dude abides and the bongs
remain. That's right. The bong abides.
All right. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Bye.